Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
Education is a right, but like most rights, education is more accessible to the ruling class. The premise of public education is good, but the hyper-localized implementation enables exploitation based on class. School districts are quite literally drawn along economic lines, which means poor kids are definitionally provided fewer resources. This disparity is a feature of the system, not a bug. A basic example of this problem occurring is in the rise of volunteerism to provide resources to schools and students. ABC News has featured a segment, at least twice on their national nightly news, about volunteers making physical desks for students learning virtually. Instead of having the community pay taxes to provide student resources, it's somehow better to have the community create student resources while also paying taxes into a school district that doesn't provide student resources.
Isn't that crazy that private citizens have to make desks for kids? It's as if nobody actually cares about education, and it's so shockingly insane that we take this horrid hellscape mentality of what capital does to you, how, you know, it bleeds you dry and it makes you fight for every resource. And then we, you know, I don't want to say expect, but we hope and praise individuals who go above and beyond, you know, what other people are doing in order to make sure students have an education, when in fact it should just be a right and it should just be given to you. You should already be paying for it, you know, I guess out of your taxes. Every district is funded through, you know, taxes on your property, and then every school district is ran by its own, like, small group of people in a small geographic area. And it creates this sort of polluted, perverted control where each district is somewhat different. They don't have the resources they need, so they have to reallocate funds at the state level. And it's really a weird, I don't know, intersection between why you need centralized planning and why having such small localized group causes these issues. Because at the end of the day, you should be able to reach out to another school district and get desks if they have an overabundance of them. There are many school districts who are shutting down schools, right? They don't need all their desks. Now, to me, that's where centralized planning comes in. But because there's such a big fight for resources, no school district would ever give up any additional material that they had because they're afraid they'll never get it back.
Yeah, so let's look at this desk example and kind of just explore the influence of capital on it. You take a desk, and most of these desks that are made by volunteers are, it looks like they're maybe 5/8 inch plywood. It's probably half a sheet. It's maybe $20 for a 4x8 sheet. There's a couple nails. You need to cut it. It's probably $10 in materials and a half an hour of time if you're doing this at scale. At the same time, you have all these schools that are going to virtual learning where you have a literal building that is empty, full of desks for kids. And so why can't we take the desks that are in these unused schools and give them to the kids? So that's one very basic solution. The second very basic solution is, if there really is a desk shortage, why doesn't the school board or the school district buy pallets of plywood and use the resources of the district to mass produce desks for the kids in the district?
Yeah. Like they have wood shops.
Yeah, they have all of the necessary tools in all likelihood. They probably have an industrial table saw. They probably have flat surfaces and desks and tables necessary to do this.
They have literally everything you need to make it. So why not? Why is some individual home doing it, you know, on his own dime? And the answer is quite literally, nobody wants to pay for it.
Even though we're already paying for it.
Yeah. Nobody wants to make sure that the kids have it because it's capital coming out of their pocket. They're going to argue that they don't want tax money coming up. Oh, we can't hold a debt because we're a school district. And then at the end of the day, the students who are the most vulnerable people in our society suffer because of capital, right? Because capital doesn't care. Capital, it kills indiscriminately. It steals indiscriminately. It just does not care.
So how many kids that don't have a desk, view not having a desk as the most important issue they or their families are facing? No family exists where they are one $10 homemade desk away from being whole. They have bigger issues, and the lack of access to a desk is a manifestation of other problems. Capital can't provide a solution to a one-time need of a $10 desk for students. How is it going to solve bigger issues like homelessness? We could just house homeless people in vacant schools, but we can't even hand out unused desks from those same schools.
Isn't that crazy? You know, like the amount of food that is thrown away because there's no more school lunches is astounding. Like, honestly, the socialism that happens to support our farmers in the milk programs, the cheese programs, all the stuff for schools, all the food that's created so that they can, you know, produce for the school system. So, you know, all the vegetables. And then now that the families are providing them at home, there's a couple of things that's happening here. Like, there's excess food because, unlike other parts of capitalism, farming tends to be not only centrally planned, but also part of a cooperative or part of a equal production, equal cost structure. So now we know that there's excess food, there's excess building and capacity because no kids are in school, which means that we can solve homelessness and some other issues right away. Now that brings up another systemic issue, which there's a lot of people who rely on school lunches in order for it to be their one meal of the day or school and breakfast lunches. And there's nothing right now within capital or society that provides for those students. And it's double-edged sword. So do we keep some kids at home, or while we make the kids that are too poor to feed themselves and too poor to have internet, make them go to school? And you know, because of capital, they get punished for being poor, right? So they're put at risk of dying, and while those that have money or not, it's something that we keep bringing up, and it's just a sort of a perversion. And again, you're seeing the cracks of neoliberalism, and you're seeing the cracks of capitalism every single day with COVID. And I don't even know what the solution is right now besides, one, end capital's influence on society, and two, move away from money. Some intermediate steps there, but, you know, again, along the way, we have to figure out what's the best solution for society. And it doesn't seem to be having a bunch of people making desks randomly for kids that may not need desks because right now they're at home with COVID.
If we look at school districts and we acknowledge that they're unable to provide very tangible physical objects like a desk, how do we have any confidence that they're actually able to teach the future workers of the world anything useful? To what extent is high school education just pro-capitalistic propaganda? History, politics, all the economic stuff, it paints a picture that is pro-capital.
Yeah, it's really weird because you have like things like the Junior Achievers Club, which is basically entrepreneurship or capitalism that's pushed by those pieces of shit at the Chamber of Commerce, right? You have a bunch of these structures that are all in place, the Young Entrepreneurs Club or the school store and all these institutions in the school, or like a credit union in the school for the kids to learn how to do banking. That kind of shit. It's all designed to put you inside the box and force you in there. And arguably, it's designed, you're right, to be propaganda. Because if they really knew the history of the United States, or they really knew the history of the world around them, or you know, had critical thinking, you know, they wouldn't be so held down by what they've learned in high school. Well, we know that they teach in propaganda, you know, because you know, real education requires critical thought. It would require individuals to have the freedom to ask questions about why is this happening and why is it this way, which would then lead to potentially the collapse of capitalism because individuals ask a question as to what, why the hell do I go to work? Why am I doing this? And that's, capital doesn't want that because they need status quo. They need you to work for them.
So schools perpetuate sort of an individualistic perspective. Perhaps the most effective thing that schools could do right now would be to say, hey, you're in high school and you're in shop class. Let's make desks for other people because we should collectively care about other people. But you don't see that happening at all. Instead, we're teaching them about how the U.S. came in and apparently won World War II or something like that, when it was really the USSR.
Yeah, and how we didn't hire Nazis, overtly hire Nazis to make our programs. I mean, we did. Like NASA. Yeah, right. So there's, you know, you don't learn about the histories of the Native American. Like, you know, we talk about modern-day genocide, so we don't talk about, you know, the indigenous genocide that happened in the United States. We say it's manifest destiny, or they wanted a deal. You know, we made them non-savage, which is crazy. Right? You don't talk about slavery and the amount of deaths that happened and how there's still that history of violence today. You don't learn about why cops are formed. You know, you don't learn about things that are actually cause you critical thought because high school is just designed to pump out another student. It's based on Thomas Mann's theories that he learned from Prussia, which is, you know, all the kids learn at the same rate. All the kids are in the same classroom. They should all become workers one day. There's systemic issues with education, and we're seeing it again under COVID. I mean, the theme of these last few podcasts has been that COVID is basically widening the cracks of the dam, and there's not too many thumbs we can keep cramming in the holes to stop the floodwaters from opening up.
So as the school curriculum sort of descends into I guess, pro-capitalism, and it's largely been like this for a long, long time. Kids themselves are starting to realize that some of the things they're being taught are maybe not aligned with reality. If you're a kid and you don't have a desk, and you can't explain why you don't have a desk, and you watch the TV, and somebody in Arizona is getting a desk made by volunteers, you look at that and you say, why isn't my school district providing a desk? Like, these are very tangible, observable things for a kid, where they're not told necessarily why it's happening, but they have an innate understanding that they don't have a fucking desk. And they can look around and be like, why can't I get my desk from school?
Yeah, and the students that are thinking like that, you know, are shunned or pushed away or you know, pushed down, because teachers, for better or for worse, are still workers. And they still have a life of their own. And because we have created this system of individualism, meaning that we've also created individual school zones so that we don't have to, one school district doesn't have to pay for the poor kids in another school district. You know, we have a very splintered educational system. And we try to do things like Common Core, which is terrible. But at the end of the day, we should take these districts and roll them into a much larger district, which is a county level, which would normalize out all the fluctuations, for good or for bad, from urban or rural areas. Just having real state oversight and real state programs that teach real education. And the hard part is that, again, humans run this. And so to change anything that they've learned is really tough. And so when you go back to change management, I thought of this, getting somebody to change the entire structure of school district is going to take people on the ground who really want to fundamentally change. And in order for that to happen, they have to understand why it must change. And it must change because there's no way for us to still manage individual school districts and still provide the care that we need for all children, because somebody's going to be left behind, to use that really terrible, terrible President Bush's, you know, No Child Left Behind idea. But children are left behind. And in fact, this is the policies that he created that are leaving kids behind. And it's not that we need everybody to be valedictorians. We need everybody to have an actual education so they can contribute to society. And not monetarily, but contribute in ways that society needs. We still need art. We still need volunteerism. We still need, you know, friends and family. We still need everything that school doesn't teach you, but should teach you and be the foundation of who you are. Because again, at the end of the day, you spend, I don't know, 6 to 8 hours a day with your classmates that probably is a lot more focused than you would with your family, who are fighting capitalistic interests and working 60 hours a week.
Yeah, so I think you raised two important points. One is that there's a lot of redundancy at the city or school board level, where you have effectively unqualified people being elected to run a school board.
Yes.
They do all sorts of redundant and wasteful stuff.
Yep.
Relative to the same school district that is, you know, on the other side of the county road, two groups of incompetent people attempting to do the same thing. It serves no purpose.
None.
It's a waste, both in terms of efficiency and sort of human capital, to not centrally plan that and create a better system.
Yep.
And then the second piece is that kids aren't exposed to the collectiveness of society. They're not viewed as a part of a whole, like, collective machine that creates doctors, that helps people, that creates other teachers, that creates, you know, widgets in a factory, that help, you know, person A, B, and C, even though it's all indirectly. Like, we're all in this together, to quote the, you know, pro-COVID propaganda from corporations. But corporations can spout it because it's in their best interest from a consumerism perspective, but the school districts aren't taking a similar stance.
Yeah, yeah. There's this realization that the school district has become competitive. And the reason why it's so competitive is there's things like sports that draw students from other areas, because one of the ways that you can get out of your current situation or make a better name for yourself or for your family is through sports. And one of the reasons or ways that we waste a ton of money in schools is through sports. And right now, all that money doesn't need to go to sports. But if you sell bonds to increase the size of your stadium, that money is earmarked to increase the size of your stadium, so you cannot deviate with that money. It'd be illegal for you to do that. And so there's a lot of systematic failures right now with the way that we've structured schools, like technology expansions. You know, those can't be moved over to pay teachers because there's such an anti-teacher, anti-union fervor in the nation. It's almost like the Red Scare. It's almost like the Chinese Scare that's happening right now, right? It's an anti-union, anti-teacher sentiment that's kicked in. And then finally, we're seeing that individuals just don't want to give up any more of their money because they're already stretched too thin. One of the ways they're stretched thin is that the only real piece of asset that, you know, the middle class has, you know, that goes with them is their home. And yet that's the one thing we tax every year. And the question then, you know, should be why are students that live in a perceived to be higher quality area get better education? Because that's what it is, right? Home values are a perception of what they really are. You know, it's all speculative. So why do some kids get to be better off than others? And it tears the whole fabric of what it means to be society apart, because now we have competition. And that's the one point I raised, is that it's competition between districts, competitions in sports, competitions in which school district's better. Testing is designed to make them compete against each other to see which school district is better so that, you know, they get better funding. And at the end of the day, what the competition should be is society, or as a society, are we making sure that all the students have learned and have all the students grown to be what they can be, the best they can be?
So you raise all of these points about where school funding goes, and we're anti-union kind of collectively as a nation. So if we really want to prioritize the quality of our kids' education, why don't kindergarten teachers get tenure? You have, you know, college and university professors get tenure. They get paid indefinitely. They have certain rights and restrictions that do or do not apply to them. Why don't we value elementary school teachers? Why can't they have tenure? And the answer is because you have this opposition locally to unions, and it becomes a direct sort of payout from my pocket as a working class resident of a given school district. And I don't want my hard-earned money going to provide benefits to teachers that end up teaching my kids. It's a very short-sighted thought. But at the same time, you have these bonds and these large expenditures at school districts on sports. Why does any solitary cent from a local community go towards sports in public schools? It's a misplacement of priorities. And I'm not saying that sports should not exist. I'm saying that the kind of federal and societal mandate to provide education access and teaching to students is much more important than sports. So if your community has enough resources and money that they want to fund sports, great. But let's prioritize education in schools before we start spending money on sports and getting a bigger football stadium so that, you know, you can play your crosstown rival in football on Friday nights while their stadium that was equally expensive sits completely open, empty, and unused.
And there's nothing here that is trying to, you know, assault or shame anybody that holds value in the constructs that are around you, material conditions where that you were raised, that say that, you know, you take pride in the fact that your kid plays football, because those are prideful moments. That's completely understandable. That's what humans are. Humans have pride and they have joy and they have all these really deep emotions when they see children or those that they've raising or mentoring do better than they were. So there is nothing here that says that we shouldn't, you know, praise kids or give those opportunities. The question becomes, though, is why do we have a $3 million stadium going up, but there's no art center? Or
kids don't have lunch.
Or kids don't have desks, right? So you have these bonds and you have these white elephants that sit around and they're not being used, right? So they're not multifunctional. They're just these things that take up space, right? They take maintenance. They take upkeep for partial seasons for a select group of individuals at a school to participate in. And that means, what's a football team? Like 40 kids? So you have a 500 person school, a high school, and you have 40 kids that get to play football. I mean, so you think in that percentages, and it becomes, you know, actually a really weird selectivism that happens where you're trying to select only the best to come out of your schools. And you do that with scholarships and other places. Before I go digress too much, you know, the argument here is that, you know, the focus has been on individualism and the focus has been on anti-union and the focus has been on sports, when in reality, the focus should be on the students. If you really want to make a difference, get active, get local, start asking questions, go to school boards. I know you don't have time. Nobody has time. I completely understand it. Grab onto a local issue that you really love and try to make a difference. Try to throw a rock in the water and make some ripples.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.